You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous. At this time, we ask that you turn off all cell phones. Unless, of course, you're using them to listen to this podcast, in which case, please keep it on. And please refrain from any flash photography, as it is dangerous to the performers of this podcast. Please be advised that this production may contain strobe effects, loud or sudden noises, nudity, and but probably not. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Bugga.
Hey, Ebony.
Hey.
We're going to play a game.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm super excited.
I'm excited, too. I just came up with it. I hope it's funny. One of these things is not like the other.
Okay.
It's kind of like an SAT test for you. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So there's
a list.
I didn't
take those.
Well, you're going to take one now.
Okay.
There's a list of three.
Okay.
A, Times Square in the 80s.
Okay.
B, the Brooklyn Tabernacle Choir.
Okay.
C, six adorable micro pigs in teacups.
Micro pigs in teacups. Is that a thing?
It is.
Holy
Google
macro.
It. It's adorable.
Oh, wow. I would say Times Square in the 80s.
Well, you would be correct. And do you know why?
Why?
Because welcome. You've reached Theater Geeks Anonymous, and today we're talking about the life, the musical, on the Broadway.
I'm so excited about this
show. I
know,
me too. I've got to tell you, because this was one of those CDs that I bought for myself when I was in high school, and it has really stuck with me. Not in a way because, like, I mean, there's nothing about my life and
right.
The story of this show.
Also, that we were, like, teeny weeny when was happening.
Well, not really teeny.
Elementary school.
I don't think so. It was in the,
the
I 80s, can't remember
the, I mean.
Oh, well.
The
in,
80s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, while when it was Times actually Square was like, that, like yeah. how it was, we were teeny.
But when the show came out, it was like 97, I
yeah,
think. 97
right.
on Broadway. I'll let you know precisely when it was when we get into it. But I you know, like I when I bought this, I was in high school, but it must have been like, let's see, my junior year in high school, I
okay.
think. But you're right, in the Times Square in the 80s, we were just little bitties.
Right. We did.
We wouldn't have even known what Times Square was.
No, we wouldn't have.
Maybe I would have, because
theater kids.
I decided
we were
Broadway
kids.
Was at age 10
but
Broadway.
I don't think we had any idea like what it was actually like.
No,
because like we both grew up in the burbs, like
it's
different
true.
burbs, but there's no nothing like 42nd Street in either place we
uh-uh.
grew up.
Nope.
No
there's no definitely not in Central Illinois. Mm-hmm.
And Baltimore, I'm sorry, but you have no 42nd Street.
No, it's funny, like my really only recollection of what New York would have been at that time was like through movies.
Right.
And it was dirty and grimy and crime filled, but mm-hmm. that still, I mean, like still you never really got the full extent of it.
No.
But Ira Gassman had the idea.
Did he write the libretto?
This was his idea.
Okay.
Yeah. And he wrote the book and also helped with the lyrics. No, he did the lyrics and helped with the book. You know what? Maybe I should read my notes and not go by memory. Especially after the week I've had. So I picked up a job. We'll get into the show in just a moment.
It'll happen.
I you know, nanny during the week, like mm-hmm. I think most people know on this podcast, but I just picked up an extra job on Saturdays and Sundays because I don't have anything else to do, right? Grooming dogs. And I you know this about me. After I left the Phantom Tour, I had both time and money at the same time. And that never happened. So I literally was like, what can I do? I know. I'll learn how to groom dogs.
It's a very smart idea. It really was.
Thank you. Well, yeah. And I was really nervous about it because it's a big chunk of change. It's an investment to get the certification and to learn how to groom dogs. And I had no idea if A, I was going to even like it, mm-hmm. and B, if I was going to be any good at it. And so I ended up being both. So I've got this little, you know, side hustle that I love and I enjoy very much. And so this new place opened up on Ditmars in Astoria. And so I went in one day and was like, so I have my grooming certificate and I also have a daytime job. So I wouldn't actually be able to work any other days except Saturday. And she goes, oh, well, I have all of these people that can work every day except Saturday. And I was like, great. So it was meant to be. But in my reasoning for telling this story mm-hmm. is that I'm exhausted. My mm-hmm. mind and my body are both just completely depleted of energy. But I'm also super excited to talk about The Life because it is such a good show.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'll mention this in my story here. Like the cast, there was not a bad one among them. And that is not the reason that this is considered a flop.
It's
at all.
I would say like this cast is pretty comparable in ways to the Shuffle Along.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, cast, yeah.
Like, yeah, it was not their fault that this show didn't go further. And it really wasn't the show's fault either. Other than for the reasons I'll bring up in just a second. Are you so excited?
I'm really excited.
The anticipation. Woo! Okay, so The Life is a musical based on an original idea by Ira Gassman, who I mentioned before wrote the lyrics, but mm-hmm. also helped in writing the book. The show explores the underbelly of Times Square 42nd Street, inhabited by pimps, prostitutes, druggies, dealers, and runaways. Oh, and street dealers, of course, in the era prior to the Disneyfication. So let's write a musical about it. So I'll mention the creatives. As I said before, Ira Gassman wrote the lyrics. He is known for being a columnist for the Sag Harbor Express, but he also wrote What's a Nice Country Like You Doing in a State Like This, the musical.
Oh, do you know?
I had never heard of this before, yeah, but we're going to have to do some research and maybe do an episode on it because...
Was it a Broadway?
Oh, probably not.
Okay.
We'll find out a little bit more. I didn't actually delve into that title at all. I just thought it was a really funny title.
Yeah, it's cute.
But like I said, he was a columnist, but he's also just a big Broadway lover, from what I gathered in doing this research. The music was written by Cy Coleman, who wrote Sweet Charity, also about a prostitute, Little Me, 20th Century, which I love, Will Rogers' Folly, City of Angels,
Holy Mackerel,
among others.
So, nothing to sneeze at.
No, this guy knows what he's doing. He's really amazing. I think he's still writing something, and I can't remember right now. I think he wrote something just recently, and I cannot put my finger on the name of it right now, but maybe you can do that and see if you can find any information. But Cy Coleman wrote the music. The book was written by there are three people: Cy Coleman, Ira Gassman, and then they added in David Newman, who was famous for writing It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, and Oh Calcutta, which are, I think, both on our list.
Yes, they are. I actually heard a song from the Superman one mm-hmm. at the 54 Below concert I went to.
Okay. So the synopsis of the show, and stop me if you do find any information on that, and we'll plug it in. But the synopsis of the show, and I could not dwindle it down to just a paragraph. So I'm going to go through Act 1 and Act 2, because it's fun. In Act 1, the life depicts the pulsating life on the Times Square streets in the 1980s, where everything had a price, especially sex. The garish topless bars, the transvestite joints, the hookers who worked the sidewalks at the bidding of their pimps. Jojo, an opportunistic, conniving white hustler in the thick of the action, has a bare-knuckled plan for feeding his ambition. But among these unsavory characters, there are appealing people who have been caught in the web of these sordid surroundings. Sonia is a veteran hooker who has seen better days and befriends Queen, who's on the street because her man Fleetwood is a displaced Vietnam veteran who needs her support. She has saved her money and on this day plans to get away with Fleetwood and leave the life for good. However, Queen discovers that Fleetwood has spent half of her savings to pay off his drug debts and defeat his habit. Apparently, Fleetwood had PTSD super bad after Vietnam War, and the only way he could cope was by doing cocaine. Mm-hmm. Fleetwood has an unrealistic dream of attaining power and money. Jojo tells him he'll never amount to anything as a pimp as long as he's romantically involved with the woman he's selling. Jojo takes him to the Port Authority, where they find Mary, just off the bus from Minnesota. Jojo grabs at her suitcase so that Fleetwood can rescue it and become her hero. Reluctantly, Queen takes Mary to her room that she shares with Fleetwood, but tries to persuade her to go home. Jojo cajoles Mary into taking a turn as a go-go dancer. A smashing success, she celebrates her good fortune with Fleetwood and Jojo, who has her in mind for his mentor, Lou. To read this now is making no sense at all. So I'll try to make sense of it as we go along.
Okay.
Let's see. So Fleetwood and Jojo has Mary in mind for his mentor, Lou, who's a gaudy Los Angeles producer of motion pictures of the XXX variety, who's looking for fresh corn-fed talent. So Fleetwood and Jojo are putting Mary in as a go-go dancer right now to make money off of her, but Jojo ultimately wants her to make porn flicks with Lou so that he can make more money off of her later. Once again in jail, Queen reflects on her attachment to Fleetwood. While enticed by Mary, Jojo and Fleetwood spend the night with her in a threesome. And as Fleetwood turns his attentions toward Mary, Memphis, another pimp who's a really nasty piece of work, makes his move to put Queen on his deck. Queen discovers what's been going on between Fleetwood and Mary and decides she's finally had enough. And as everyone parties at the hookers' ball, Lou makes off with Mary, while Queen, shunning Fleetwood, attaches herself to Memphis. Intermission. Now, Act 2. In Memphis' spacious apartment, Queen thanks him for getting her out of jail and for the beautiful dress he gave her to wear to the hookers' ball. But Memphis makes it clear that the dress was $6,000 loan that she must repay with her earnings. He warns Queen that she better not leave town. He'll kill Fleetwood if she does, and then her. Queen tells Sonia that she must find Fleetwood and warn him about Memphis' threat. She asks Jojo to tell Fleetwood to meet her at the next morning. Meanwhile, Mary, with Lou, toasts her acceptance of his offer of a movie career. So Mary's totally into it. The next morning, Jojo double-crosses Queen and meets with her and Memphis in tow, who brutally beats Queen. Then Fleetwood arrives. Queen reminds him of what they once had together. And when Fleetwood returns to his hotel, he finds Mary leaving for Los Angeles. Later, near the Hudson River, in a spot once special to Queen and Fleetwood, Sonia hands Queen a bus ticket and a suitcase in a desperate attempt to get her away from Memphis. Fleetwood unexpectedly appears and tries to talk Queen into making a new start, but Queen bitterly rejects him. Jojo guides Memphis onto the scene. What is wrong with Jojo? Like, what a jerk. Seriously, yeah. Stay out of it. Fleetwood pulls a gun on Memphis, but Jojo knocks the gun loose as Memphis mortally stabs Fleetwood. Fleetwood dies. Queen seizes the fallen gun, shoots Memphis. Memphis dies. Sonia decides she's going to take the rap for killing Memphis, claiming self-defense, and she and Queen say goodbye. Queen then departs for the bus, which will carry her to freedom as Sonia surrenders to the police. Curtain.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Ebony's a face right now. I know. Ebony, I gotta tell you, I knew the story because I have the CD. Right. And of course, I read all of the liner notes because I'm such a nerd that way.
Right.
But it's still, I wrote that down and I still was like, oh my gosh. And I was still getting mad at JoJo. And I was still like, Memphis, mind your own business. And I was still like, Fleetwood, seriously, clean up your act and get out of town. Queen loves you. And then you're like, Sonya, come on. But she's like really the only redeemable character in this whole show. Well, Queen is kind of too. Anywho.
But then Sonya takes the rap.
I know. But I think it's ultimately her way of getting out of the life. She sings this amazing song in Act Two called... and of course, I can't remember. Wait, give me a second. I'm worn out and weary. I can't remember the words now either. I'm getting too old for the oldest profession. She sings this song and it's like her torch song moment. So you know that she's done, but she doesn't have any way of getting out.
Right.
And so I feel like maybe this is her way not only of getting redemption because she has now saved her friend, but she's also out. There's no getting past it. But also I feel like, too, it was self-defense. So we don't know, you know, what kind of sentence she might have gotten at that point.
Like maybe she would have gotten off because
self-defense.
And I mean,
there's a dead body that Memphis... you know, killed.
Right.
So, you know, he's not a nice guy. Probably the police had a file on him. Who knows? But I think, you know, that was her way of just coming to terms with the fact that she spent the last 16 years of her life in the life.
Right.
And she was not happy and she never had been, but she didn't have any way of getting out. Anyway, now she's out. So just to give you a little bit of a background, the show was first produced at the Off-Broadway West Beth Theater, running from July 30th until August 16th of 1990. Joe Layton directed and choreographed with a cast that featured Chuck Cooper, Lilias White, and Mamie Duncan Gibbs. Chuck Cooper and Lilias White were both in the Broadway production both winning Tony Awards for Best Featured Actor and Actress in a Musical. Chuck Cooper playing Memphis and Lilias White playing Sonya.
Mm.
And I mean, okay, I don't know if you've seen the Tony Awards. The performance, though, is just insane. It's My Body is the song that they do. So you've got all of the... And they're all called hookers in the show. So I'm not going to feel bad about calling them hookers. But you got all the hookers on stage and they're all singing. But like Lilias White is just... so phenomenally talented that I just can't. She gives me chills every time I hear her sing anything. She's just amazing. In 1994, Cy Coleman and Ira Gassman asked David Newman to help rewrite the show. Newman is quoted as saying, "Whatever it was back when they did the workshop, it's totally different now." I wish I could have found more info on the Off-Broadway production. There just wasn't a whole lot on the internet.
Okay.
I couldn't find any reviews. I couldn't find any videos. I couldn't find a script. So I'm going to put out a plea. If there's anybody in our podcast listening audience, if you have anything on the original Off-Broadway production at the West Beth Theater of the Life, if you could send that to us, I would be so fascinated to find out what the differences are in the Off-Broadway and the Broadway production. The Broadway production then was directed by Michael Blakemore, whom we just spoke about in the Rebecca episode. Michael Blakemore is just an amazing director here in New York. He's done a lot. And of course, I don't have any other shows. Yeah, he's chewing on a bone. Okay. Puddle's chewing on a bone. So if you hear that, that's what he's doing.
The way Puddle usually gets something he shouldn't have, the sound, I just didn't know what it was, and I was nervous.
No, it's a shin bone.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's like a lamb.
Okay.
Or a cow, who knows?
Sorry, vegetarian, vegan people who
I
are
know,
listening.
I'm sorry. There's just, you know what? Honestly, though, I am kind of glad that they used the entire animal.
Yeah.
Because I eat meat, and mm-hmm. I'm still going to eat my ground beef, but it's nice to know that my dogs can chew on an ear or a shin bone. It's so gross when you put it that way. Anywho, the Broadway production, directed by Michael Blakemore, opened on April 26th of 1997 at the Ethel Barrymore Theater, where it closed on June 7th, 1998, after 466 performances and 21 previews.
That's not a terrible 400.
It's not. It was just over a year.
Yeah.
So it actually was not... it wasn't a short production.
Right.
It just, in terms of it being a flop, it wasn't very well received.
Mm-hmm.
And the reviews were kind of wishy-washy.
And then financially, it probably didn't.
Yes. Yeah. And I couldn't find that information either. And mm-hmm. I even went to find, like, 1997, 1998 Broadway grosses by the week. And it gave me information, but nothing could really tell me how much they, like, what the budget was as opposed to how much they ended with. So, unfortunately, there's not a lot of that kind of information in this, but we'll definitely delve into more of the show itself. Among the large cast were Pamela Isaacs as Queen, who also is just, love her. Chuck Cooper as Memphis. Bellamy Young playing Mary. Lilias White as Sonia. And Sam Harris as JoJo. I texted Ebony earlier this week. There's so many sidebars in this episode, but I feel like it's necessary. I texted Ebony at the beginning of this week and I said, hey, do you watch Scandal? And she said, no. And I said, oh, that's too bad. So I'm going to ask you, do you guys watch Scandal? Because I was looking up clips and found a clip of Bellamy Young performing one of her numbers in The Life as Mary and realized that it is Melly Grant, the president's wife / Secretary of State in Scandal. And I was what?
I've seen, like, because my old roommate at my last apartment loved Scandal. And
okay.
She would, like, binge watch it. Yeah. So I would, like, see bits over her shoulder.
Yeah.
So the face of that woman, I'm like, okay, I know who that is.
Yes. And it was her Broadway debut. So I just thought that was the coolest little chunk of information there. And here's another one. This is cool. Sam Harris played JoJo. Sam Harris was the winner of the very first Star Search in 1984. Isn't that amazing?
I just love
trivia like
that.
No
idea.
Choreography was done by Joey McNeely. Scenic design by Robin Wagner. Costume design by Martin Pakeldenaz. I have no idea. That is completely butchered last name. Sorry. And the lighting design by Richard Pilbro. Lilias White and Chuck Cooper, like I said before, both won the 1997 Tony Awards for Featured Actress and Featured Actor in a Musical for their performances in this production. We're going to talk now about what the critics had to say. And I scoured the internet trying to find information. And I did find a couple of reviews. But there's just so little about The Life on the interweb.
I don't understand that.
I don't either. It was like the beginning of the internet.
But, like, I mean, I'm even able to find, like...
Stuff from the 40s.
Yeah.
And I think... I don't know what it was. Maybe it was cleaned. Like, maybe Ira Gassman was just like, I don't want anything out there. Or, you know, that's all conjecture. I'm not saying that he did that. But it's like, you know, who knows? Because it literally was like, I would search and I would click on something that should have led me to something else. But then that, it disappeared. It was so strange. It was very, very strange. Just saying, conspiracy.
Weird.
So I did find a Variety critique by Greg Evans. The review says it was first workshopped nearly 7 years ago. The life, like the hookers it sings about, has been around the block enough times to pick up some nasty habits. A musical that can't make up its mind. Is it a cartoon? A gritty slice of Times Square? A Bob Fosse ripoff? All of the above. The life wears its patchwork construction as obviously as its pimps wear wide-brimmed hats. So profound is this musical's identity crisis that even determining the year in which it's set becomes a guessing game. The Coleman-Gassman tunes give spark to the life, but with its impossibly hokey book and stock characters that have been working the streets since before talkies, the life chronicles the struggles of gold-hearted hookers and their mean old pimps in a manner that uneasily updates musical theater convention. Just imagine Coleman's own Sweet Charity getting the stuff kicked out of her by a zebra-coated huggy bear, and you're fast approaching the life. So that's that review. And that was, like, not on the fence at all. Mm. You know, they said the songs are good, and that is very true. The songs in the show are very good, but the show just wasn't strong enough.
I was listening to something this week where someone said they felt like maybe the life came too close to, you know, the pre-Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, sure.
New York City, and so well, maybe that had some... Been,
was that the... It was, like, 88?
When did the show open again? What year was that?
Well, the off-Broadway production opened in 1990.
Okay, yeah.
And then rewrites... They started the rewrites in 94 and then opened in 97
on Broadway.
But, like, if they're going off the off-Broadway, then, yeah, I think it would have been right on the coattails of all of that happening.
Okay.
just to give you an idea, here's a line. One of the lines that Mary says is, "Cheese and crackers, my first day in New York, and I've already got a job lined up."
Cheese and crackers?
Cheese and crackers. Well, she is from Minnesota.
Cheese and crackers.
I know.
Well, although I think any of my friends listening would think that something like that would come out of my mouth. So maybe...
Gosh and golly, I mean, it probably would, to be honest. Both of us. Both of us are guilty of that.
Yeah.
I did find a New York Times review by Vincent Canby. He writes, "The seemingly dark secret about the life..." What are my dogs doing?
They're having a hard time today.
I'm having a hard time today.
I just don't want
to... I know. "The seemingly dark secret about the life is that it's by far the most entertaining new musical to have opened last season. The life displays more fresh, fully realized talent and go-for-broke pizzazz than can be found anywhere else on Broadway, except at the Schubert, where the revival of Chicago is in residence." This guy loved it. Mm-hmm. And throughout the article... joy was the main focus. Like, he just said it was full of joy. It was joy itself. It joyous, blah, blah, blah. Joy, joy, joy. It was all about joy for him. And I love that he saw that in this mm-hmm. musical, because he does mention, and I didn't write the whole thing down, but he does mention that it's not, you know, it's not the best show ever written, but in the musicals that were up that year, it shines because it comes out of the dark place and tries to move into the light mm-hmm. and, you know, and to be joyful. It's, I love his opinion on it, but I also, you know, I just love the show. I do. You know, and kind of just to end this off, I really have no idea. I really have no idea how to finish the episode off.
Because it's one of those things where it's not because the talent wasn't there. It's not because the music wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
There was some critics who didn't like the book.
And there were some critics that, like, loved it.
Right.
So I'm left with so many questions.
Yeah.
I want to know what the difference between the off-Broadway and the Broadway productions were. I want to know where all the reviews are, because mm-hmm. I couldn't find anything else. I mean, and
so
I,
weird.
To find the New York Times one, it was like going through rabbit hole after rabbit hole. I really had to scour the internet for it. I want to know what the original budget was. How much did they end up losing?
Yeah.
Was this truly a flop?
Right.
You know, and I don't know. What I do know is that when I bought this soundtrack back in 1997, along with the cast recordings of Steel Pier and Titanic, which were all up for Tony Awards that year, mm-hmm. I had no idea I would be so enchanted by sex workers and pimps. Mm-hmm. When Lilias White sings, it drips with sarcasm and utter heartbreak. Pamela Isaacs is so unapologetically vulnerable with a steel backbone. Bellamy Young is sweet and fresh-faced with this underlying focus that can turn conniving and manipulative in a breath. And that's just for starters. You talk about strong female roles on Broadway, and the fact that these roles Lilias and Pamela played also happen to be Black.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really incredible to me how ahead of their time Gassman, Coleman, and Newman all were.
Right.
You know,
and
we
that's
talk
the thing
about
that happens, right? Yeah. It's like people are so far ahead. Like, that's the problem with being a forerunner.
Yeah.
It's like you're so far ahead, and it takes people such a long time to
catch
up.
By the time we do, you've already been forgotten. Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Because, I mean, I remember, like, when Wicked first came out, and people were like, oh, finally, a musical with two female leads. But it's happened so much more frequently than that. And this is the perfect example, because, really, honestly, the females in this show tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
The antagonists are the men trying to hold them down, trying to hold them back, trying to tear down what they have created for themselves, or even just trying to tear down their happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But the protagonists, the women in this story, are such, and they're all so completely different from each other in terms of characterization that it's so good. I just love it. And I do love the fact that the two main female leads are Black. I just think that's incredible, because that doesn't happen very often.
No.
And it certainly doesn't happen in a mainstream show. And it certainly doesn't happen in a show that lasts an entire year on Broadway and takes home two Tonys with featured Black actors.
Yeah.
I just think that's incredible. And I've said my piece. Can you tell I really like this show?
Piece.
It's such a good show. I mean, like, honestly, you know, I'll still try to find more information, because I still do have so many questions about this. But if you
listen, I mean, the Chuck Cooper interview on Behind the Curtain can help a little bit.
Okay.
Of course, though, you know, it's not like they have I don't think they interviewed a producer for the show.
I couldn't even find that information. Like, who produced it?
Holy mackerel, really?
I know!
Like, not
I'm
even on IMDb, though? IMDb sometimes gives you the list of the producers.
I did look up on IMDb, but I don't think I was looking for producers when I saw it. So, let me quickly do it now.
And I couldn't find anything recent with Ira Gassman.
Okay.
And then Psy died in 2004.
That's right. I asked you to do something recent, but he couldn't have done anything recent. Okay.
I mean, they're doing a bunch of his songs are in The Prince of Broadway, but that's it.
Okay. That's what it was. That's what
is
I
that
read.
What it was? Okay.
Yes, that's what I read.
Okay.
Because I knew it was a show that was happening like now.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't remember it right then. So it was produced by Roger Berlind, Martin Richard, Sam Crothers, Frank Tarja, and Cy Coleman.
Okay.
So now I'm going to fall down that rabbit hole and click on all of those names and do more research. But it is really interesting. I would love if anyone in our audience has any further information about this show. I'd love to, like, really pick your brain about it if you have any info. If you want to, you can send us an email directly, tgabway@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
And then you could message Pamela if you go to the Theater Geeks Anonymous page. And then we're also on Twitter, so you can go to @TGA
B-way.
And and comment there, send us a message, and I'll get that to Pamela.
That'd be amazing. Please let me know.
And we're on SoundCloud. You can actually like us on SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm.
You might even be able to comment. I think you can comment on SoundCloud. So cool. If you know something about this episode,
oh yeah,
you can comment on SoundCloud and let
we'll
us
get
know.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get that. And then, of course, we're on iTunes.
Yes, we are.
At Theater Geeks Anonymous.
Yep.
And, guys, it happened. We're on Stitcher.
Whee!
I did it. So if you have an Android, you have two ways to listen to us, SoundCloud and Stitcher. And if you have an Apple, you could probably also listen to us on SoundCloud. But, of course, you have iTunes. So
yes, you do.
Please share, like, follow. Please, please review, rate, and subscribe on iTunes.
Please and thank you.
Yes.
Cheese and crackers. Do it for us, won't you? <ya? laughs>
And we really just, we love to hear from you. So don't be afraid to reach out because we'd love to hear from you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks for stopping by, everybody.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Have a great day. Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.